actual Proverbs, which are just lists and lists of Proverbs. And these Proverbs, as I've said in the past, are, in my opinion, random. Even though sometimes you will find Proverbs that are grouped together thematically, or one leads to another kind of sequence. And of course, Bible people who write books on the Bible try very hard to find intricate patterns in the Proverbs. They're not patterns that any normal human being would find. So it's better, and either way, to just assume and take them as they appear, that they appear random. And that's, as I said before, that's true to life, right? Life doesn't come at us as we plan it to, or want it to, or expect it to. It comes at us chaotically, not according to our plan, or not within our little compartments that we would otherwise want to make up for life. And life just comes at us randomly. And since Proverbs are God's wisdom for life, it would make sense that that's how the Proverbs come to us as well. And so this week, what we've been doing then in light of that is grouping all the Proverbs that are random throughout chapters 10 through 31, grouping them under different umbrellas of topics that they deal with. And, you know, there are a lot more topics in that Proverbs deal with than we could deal with, but what we've been trying to do is take a look at the major topics where we see a significant amount of Proverbs dealing with. And one of those where we see a lot of Proverbs focused on, touching on, addressing, is the topics of anger and conflict. And in the sermon title in your bulletin, I tried to phrase it in a more positive way: God's wisdom for our patience and our peace. But really what Proverbs deals with is the negative end of that, anger and conflict. And those really aren't two separate categories in Proverbs. They're not exactly the same, but more than being two separate categories, that is one category in the book of Proverbs in which anger leads to conflict, and conflict often leads right back to anger. And a lot of times when we talk about anger, when we think about anger, I think one of the things we think about, where we often start thinking, is sometimes in a more sort of theoretical or hypothetical way, where we start to think about the moral question of anger. Well, is anger a good thing or a bad thing? Or when is anger a good thing or a bad thing? Or how much of my anger is a good thing or a bad thing? And that is a valid question, I think. We've touched on that in other sermons at other times, but that isn't where Proverbs starts. And often I do think it's not the best, most helpful place to start, because for most of us, that's not where the question of anger meets real life. Most of us don't need to approach anger in sort of a theoretical way that considers the moral nature of it. Most of us need to approach anger in the more real life way that considers the relational effects of it. And that's really where Proverbs starts is in looking at the relational effects of anger. And in looking at anger, Proverbs is assuming sinful anger and assuming sinful expressions of that anger. That's what's within the scope of the book of Proverbs: sinful human anger and sinful expressions of that anger. And most of us, I think, that's where we need to start. Most of us need to become more aware of our sinful anger and more able to stop giving that anger sinful expression, but more able to respond in a godly way to the difficulties and frustrations of life and other people, a way that is more governed by humility and patience that flows forth in gentleness and peace, rather than in a way that is governed by anger that expresses itself angry behavior. And so when considering Proverbs says about anger, I want to start where Proverbs start, assuming, having in scope sinful human anger and the sinful expressions of that anger. And I think probably for most of us, that's a good starting point. Proverbs focuses on the relational effects of anger. And the main idea that I think we see within Proverbs is that anger is a destructive force in society and communities and relationships. Anger destroys relationships in the social context of family, community, and church. In Proverbs, anger isn't wise. Anger isn't righteous. Anger doesn't solve problems, but rather anger multiplies problems. It ruins everything. It is one of the greatest sources of destruction in life. And so it's not something to be cultivated, but something to be repented of. That's what Proverbs has in scope when it's considering the question of anger. And in fact, I think the message of Proverbs is summed up well in the New Testament book of James, which is sometimes thought of as the wisdom book of the New Testament. James 1, 19 through 20, "My dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires." Human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. Anger and the conflict that results from it and flows out of it doesn't make life better. And we've seen some of these proverbs before. Proverbs 15:17, "Better a small serving of vegetables with love than a fattened calf with hatred." And Proverbs 17:1, "Better a dry crust with peace and quiet than a house full of feasting with strife." And you see the value that these proverbs put on patience and peace. And how they view so negatively anger and hatred and conflict and strife. Anger is an attack on the peace and harmony of social relationships. And Proverbs, the whole Bible, but Proverbs really values peaceful and harmonious social relationships. And so anything that attacks what Proverbs so highly values, peace and harmony in social relationships, it doesn't look highly upon anything that attacks those things. And just like we started off last week in Proverbs chapter 6 with the list of seven sins in Proverbs, the seven things God hates. You remember we looked at this as if saying God hates it isn't enough, but then it goes on to say that they're detestable to him, detestable to the deepest part of who he is. Proverbs 6:16, "There are six things the Lord hates, seven that are detestable to him." And as we said last week, of course, all sin is detestable to God. But last week we saw that the very first sin mentioned was pride. And this week we see that the very last sin mentioned in that list, a person who stirs up conflict in the community or conflict between brothers. Any conflict, of course, is bad, but the closer the relationship ought to be, the worse the conflict that tears it apart. God values peace in relationships, in families, in communities, in churches, especially in the church, and he hates when sin takes what is supposed to be close and tears it apart, and when sin takes what is supposed to be at peace and puts it at war. And in Proverbs, anger is one of the primary things that does that. Anger and conflict are inseparably connected. The angry person in Proverbs is described as quick-tempered, is described as hot-headed. And in Proverbs, and you'll see those terms come up in the Proverbs we read, and there's three general things that I think we see that characterize anger in Proverbs. In Proverbs, anger is foolish, anger is destructive, and anger is isolating. Anger is foolish. Proverbs 14:17. "A quick-tempered person does foolish things, and the one who devises evil schemes is hated." And Proverbs 14:29. "Whoever is patient has great understanding, but one who is quick-tempered displays folly." And you see in those Proverbs the connection between anger and foolishness. That foolishness, not only flows out of foolish attitudes, but it flows into foolish behavior. When you're angry, you don't exactly have the clear, level-headed ability to think through wisely and contribute constructively to the situation you're in. Rather, in anger, we do foolish things. Anger causes us to rush into fragile situations with all the delicateness of Kool-Aid Man, who just destroys what's in our path, right? Not preserving or mending with wisdom, but acting with carelessness, rashness, selfishness, all kinds of foolishness. Proverbs 14:16 goes on to say, "The wise fear the Lord and shun evil, but a fool is hot-headed and yet feels secure." And here, the foolish person who is angry is contrasted with the wise person who does the wisest thing that a wise person can do, fearing the Lord. And because of that, fearing the Lord, shunning evil. But the hot-headed, the angry fool feels secure. Even though they lack the thing that would bring about the humility in their life that would enable them to live wisely, fearing God, nevertheless, they don't fear God. They are hot-headed. They are angry. And so that anger leads to impulsive action, careless action, dangerous action. And yet the proverb says, yet they feel secure. Yet they feel safe. And that's one of the utterly foolish things about anger, and one of the extraordinarily dangerous things about anger is the blindness that it causes us, the deception that it puts over us. The fool is hot-headed, doing all kinds of rash, careless things, yet he feels secure and safe. You see how blind he is. See, nothing is more dangerous than erupting in anger, but the hot-headed fool erupts in anger and feels safe and secure. Anger is blinding. It's deceiving, and the reason it's so self-deceiving is because it's so self-justifying. When we're angry, in the midst of anger, think about a time when you just felt angry. You probably also felt really right. You probably also felt really justified in your anger. Anger is self-justifying. Anger makes us feel right. Anger convinces us we're right, despite the evidence that would say otherwise. And the more angry we feel, the more right we feel. And you see the danger of that, because then you are blinded to any possibility that you're wrong, any guard or check or restraint to that anger. So much so that then even the terrible, the sinful consequences of our own anger can turn into just one more good reason to be angry at someone else and feel justified and right about it. Anger is foolish. It flows out of foolish attitudes and it flows into foolish behaviors. And then related to that, anger is destructive. Proverbs 27:4, anger is cruel and fury overwhelming, but who can stand before jealousy? This proverb tells us that anger and fury are destructive. It describes them as cruel and overwhelming, or literally that word for overwhelming, it's a flood that comes and brings devastation, just sort of sweeps through anything in its path. This proverb presents these attitudes then in growing intensity, anger, fury, and then jealousy. It says, but who can stand before jealousy? That sort of reaches the climax of these attitudes that this proverb deals with. And in the Bible, again, jealousy, just like anger does in the Bible, it has a positive sense. But here in this proverb and in Proverbs in general, it's clearly negative. And one writer defined jealousy as the angry desire to keep what we possess but fear that someone else wants. That's sinful jealousy. And a closely related attitude that Proverbs also connects to anger is envy. And we'll deal with those two on their own terms in a future sermon. But in terms of their connection with anger, a writer defines envy in this way. Envy is the angry desire to get what someone else possesses. So jealousy is the angry desire to keep what I possess but fear that someone else wants. And envy is an angry desire to get what someone else has. In other words, anger then, and the jealousy and envy that are connected to them, comes from selfish desires. The selfish desires to keep what I have or get for myself what I don't have at any cost. Sinful anger is all about me. And again, you know, anger, there are a lot of connections between anger and pride that we looked at last week. Because much of anger, a lot of times anger, when it's about those selfish desires, when it's all about me, what's underneath it is attitudes of superiority and entitlement. Anger is about feeling better than someone else, and so feeling justified in my angry words and actions towards someone else. And anger is about entitlement, that I deserve what I want, that I deserve for things to go my way, for that I deserve for people to live up to my expectations, no matter how unfair or unrealistic they are, that I deserve to get what I want and keep what I have. And when I don't get what I deserve, then I have the right to be angry. When someone put it this way, when something pushes your buttons, it says something about the buttons inside of you. Sometimes it says more about what's inside of us than what's happening outside and around us. Anger tells us about the things that we're valuing and that we're believing and that we're pursuing. And the question this proverb asks is, who can stand before jealousy? And the implied answer is no one. Because what it's trying to communicate is that anger and jealousy are destructive towards anything or anyone that would block what they are seeking after. Anger, then, is destructive. Anger is destructive to the people around us. Proverbs 29:8 says, mockers stir up a city, but the wise turn away anger. See, wise people know how to diffuse a tense situation, know how to sort of cool down a fire that's brewing and about to erupt, but mockers are contrasted to that. They're people who light the fuse and stoke the fire, who throw gasoline on the fire, who would enter into a moderately tense situation and stir it up into a riot. Proverbs 29:22, an angry person stirs up conflict, and a hot-tempered person commits many sins. In our anger, we commit many sins. Anger hurts the people around us. It attacks the people around us. It demeans, it despises, it divides people. And it divides us, ourselves, who are angry, from other people. Anger is destructive to yourself. And as I said before, you can't miss in Proverbs the connection between division, strife, and conflict, and anger. Anger is destructive to yourself. Proverbs 19:3, a person's own folly leads to their ruin, yet their heart rages against the Lord. And Proverbs 19:19, a hot-tempered person must pay the penalty. Rescue them, and you will have to do it again. Says these Proverbs tell us that anger is destructive to ourselves, that it brings folly upon us. It brings consequences upon us. And this Proverb 19:19 tells us that the idea here is that anger gets us into trouble. And even our anger, in which we might be dishing out the punishments on other people, it nevertheless brings consequences back upon ourselves. We have to pay the penalty, it says. And this proverb actually is a warning to other people, not the angry person. It's a warning to other people, telling them not to be too quick to rescue the angry person, not to be too quick to spare them from facing the consequences of their angry behavior. Because until they're willing to face their anger and deal with their angry behavior and deal with the consequences of that, they'll just continue to repeat the pattern. And these consequences will keep coming back on them. They'll keep getting themselves into the same trouble. And sparing them from it only increases the likelihood that they'll head into it again. A hot-tempered person must pay the penalty. Rescue them, and you will have to do it again. That's a warning to not let the consequences of our anger get out of control. To not let our anger get out of our control. Anger is foolish, anger is destructive, and finally, anger is isolating. We looked at a number of these proverbs that we'll look at in a minute a couple weeks ago. These are some of the proverbs that we looked at under the topic of marriage. I just wanted to remind us as we look at these that even though they're addressed to husbands, they apply equally to husbands and wives. And I only want to point out the isolating effect of anger and the fighting that results from anger. Anger drives people who should be closest to you far away from you. Anger is isolating. Proverbs 21:9. Better to live on a corner of the roof than share a house with a quarrelsome wife. 21:19. Better to live in a desert than with a quarrelsome and nagging wife. Remember, those apply equally to wife or husband. It doesn't matter if it's the wife or the husband, but if one of them is quarrelsome, if one of them loves conflict, loves fighting, that will drive people away. If you constantly pick fights with others, if you pursue every argument to the death, you will isolate yourself by driving the people around you away. Because most people don't like to be around someone who's picking fights with them constantly. And when we talked about these proverbs in the context of marriage, we focused more on the one driven away and what conditions would exist to make somebody want to go live on the corner of a roof instead of inside a house or in a desert instead of inside their house. But think about the tragedy on the other end of that. That someone is left inside the house alone, having driven out the people that ought to love and that love them. And maybe that quarrelsome person thinks they've won. Maybe they have won that quarrel. But in the process of winning, they've lost. Do you see that? They've lost. Anger and the resulting quarreling and conflict loving that comes from it can cost us dearly. And in that way, anger betrays us. We think with our anger we're getting something good or something we want, and it betrays us. Proverbs doesn't just say that isolation is a natural consequence of anger, that it warns us about making friends with angry people. Proverbs 22:24-25, do not make friends with a hot-tempered person. Do not associate with one easily angered, or you may learn their ways and get yourself ensnared. And so what wisdom does Proverbs give us to navigate our anger and conflict? All we've learned so far might be things we already know about anger, and if we struggle with anger, it hasn't given us much help or hope. But Proverbs does give us some help and hope. What wisdom does Proverbs give us to navigate through and repent of sinful human anger? First, it tells us to overlook offenses. 19:11, a person's wisdom yields patience. It is to one's glory to overlook an offense. Proverbs 12:16, fools show their annoyance at once, but the prudent overlook an insult. Hatred stirs up conflict, but love covers over all wrongs. You see in these proverbs the good that it is to overlook an offense or an insult, and in love to cover over wrongs. Wisdom receives potential offenses and real offenses with patience. It doesn't jump to conclusions by taking things personally that aren't personally. It doesn't have extra thin skin that quickly gets offended at every perceived slight. It doesn't assume the worst about others' actions or words, but more than that, wisdom overlooks actual and real offenses. It covers wrongs. It's willing and eager to forgive. It's able to just let things go. It has the grace and humility to know that not every wrong against me needs to be addressed. It overlooks and it covers over wrongs. We more easily overlook the offenses we have done against other people. We less easily overlook the offenses others have done against us. And of course, there are some things for the health of relationships that need addressed and can't be indefinitely overlooked, that need talked about, that need dealt with. But those need to be addressed in the right way and at the wrong time, certainly not in the heat of anger or with the sinful expressions of anger that happen in a lot of quarreling or fighting or conflicts. There are many things, though, out of a response to the abundance of the grace God has shown to us for our innumerable sins, that we can overlook and that we can forgive. And even if our anger isn't the more commonly thought of explosive kind of anger, if it's more the simmering under the surface kind of anger, if we can't overlook and forgive, then that seemingly innocent anger or seemingly less destructive anger will be just as deadly. It will destroy us. It will destroy our relationships. So the first piece of wisdom that Proverbs gives us is to overlook offenses, to respond to them with patience and grace. Second, don't go looking for a fight. Proverbs 15:18, a hot-tempered person stirs up conflict, but the one who is patient calms a quarrel. Proverbs 17:14, starting a quarrel is like breaching a dam, so drop the matter before a dispute breaks out. Proverbs 17:19, whoever loves a quarrel loves sin. Whoever builds a high gate invites destruction. Proverbs 23, it is to one's honor to avoid strife, but every fool is quick to quarrel. 22:10, drive out the mocker and out goes strife. Quarrels and insults are ended. Proverbs 26:17, like the one who grabs a stray dog by the ears is someone who rushes into a quarrel, not their own. 26:21, as charcoal, some proverbs are meant to be a little comical. As charcoal to embers and as wood to fire, so is a quarrelsome person for kindling strife. You see here the repeated connection between anger and looking for a fight. And the wisdom of Proverbs is don't go looking for a fight. It's not hard to find something to fight about if you want to find a fight. It's easy. Life with sinners in a fallen world, life with sinners is what we call a target-rich environment for conflict. It's easy to find. You don't have to look hard, you don't have to try hard to find something to fight about. Often fights come easier than we want, but Proverbs recognizes that in anger, that's all the more true. In our anger, we can set out to look for a fight. Proverbs recognizes that some people love to argue, some people love to stir up conflict, so much so that even they go looking for conflicts that aren't even their own. They jump into other people's. And Proverbs considers that many conflicts aren't the result of the situations we're in or the problems that come to us, as we often feel that they are, but they are the result of us, of us choosing to fight about things, of us choosing to argue about things, such that the Proverbs says that when you remove the person who's looking for the fight goes with them. You see, if that's true, then angry fighting and angry conflict isn't inevitable. It's something we bring to the table. It's a choice we make, even if we don't feel or recognize we are making that choice in the moment. And this leads to the third piece of wisdom that Proverbs gives us, is to know the great value of self-control. 15:1, a gentle answer turns away wrath. but a harsh word stirs up anger. 1632, better a patient person than a warrior, one with self-control than one who takes a city. Proverbs 17:27, the one who has knowledge uses words with restraint, and whoever has understanding is even-tempered. 25:28, like a city whose walls are broken through is a person who lacks self-control. 29:11, fools give full vent to their rage, but the wise bring calm in the end. You know, in our anger, we often feel very strong. But these proverbs remind us that anger isn't strength, it's weakness. Sinful anger isn't strength, it's weakness. What is real strength, these proverbs tell us, is the ability to answer gently to heated words or tense situations. What is real strength, stronger than the strength of a warrior who single-handedly overtakes a city? That's impressive, right? That's like superhero strength. Proverbs tells us what's real strength, stronger than that, is the ability to control your response to others and act patiently towards them. What is real strength is to be able to restrain angry words and not give full vent to every angry thought or feeling you have, but instead to be even-tempered when life heats up and to be able to respond with constructive calm, level-headedness that can pursue and preserve relational peace. When we're responding to something in anger, as I alluded to before, sometimes it feels like self-control is irrelevant, because it doesn't feel like we're making any choices. It's just happening. It's happening to us. It's the inevitable, unavoidable response. It doesn't feel like we're thinking or calculating or deciding or making choices. We're just reacting. It feels that way, but that's not true. All our anger is calculated. We've just gotten so good at doing the calculations that we can do them in our head. We don't need to stop and pull out the calculator. And self-control means starting to gain the ability to evaluate those calculations that are happening without even thinking about it, because they're so ingrained in us. Self-control means starting to gain the ability to not just react, but to evaluate those buttons inside of us that are being pushed and ask ourselves, what am I believing that's making me want to react in this way? What am I valuing that's causing this reaction inside me? What am I seeking? And what am I seeking to accomplish in my reaction and response? And by the power of God's Spirit, self-control enables us to recalculate our responses to line up with God's values and God's goals. Proverbs 19:3, which we read earlier, says, "A person's own folly leads to their ruin, yet their heart rages against the Lord." I think this proverb hits home the ultimate problem of anger, that anger ultimately is a problem with God. Ultimately, we're angry at God. And that comes out in all of our human relationships, in all of our human circumstances. But what's at heart of it is that we are angry at God, who's given us those relationships, who's put us in those circumstances, and that we don't like the way he's governing life. But thankfully, God, who is always right and holy and justified in his anger, God is slow to anger. Exodus 34:6, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness. If there's anyone who ought to be and would be right in being quick to anger, it's God. But God is patient. God is slow to anger. And the gospel is all about the patience of God that leads to peace with God. And that gives us an invaluable resources for our struggles with anger, and conflict. The gospel is all about the patience of God that leads to peace with God. The patience of God shown to us by his grace, leading to peace with God, established for us by Jesus. And we're going to do in a minute the Lord's Supper, which is really one of the most holy things we do as a church, in a sense. And I want us to reflect upon, as we prepare for that, as we approach the Lord's table, I want us to reflect upon how we are reminded in that sacrament of the patience of God that establishes peace with God. Patience is the only way God could achieve our salvation. Aren't you glad that God was patient with us in our sin? And if God is patient towards us in our sin, how much more ought we to be patient towards others? God could have rightly come to Adam and Eve in the garden and said, "How dare you? Lightning bolt, bam, story over." Instead, he came to Adam and Eve in the garden. He should have said, "How dare you?" But he said, "Where are you?" The patience of God. His patience gave them time and opportunity to confess and led to his grace being shown them in the ultimate act of forgiveness. His clothing them in righteousness that would point ahead to the righteousness of Christ that's given to us in the gospel. In his holy anger, he ought to have shown them wrath, but he came in mercy. He gave a sacrifice so that he could clothe them in his righteousness. We now are clothed in the righteousness of Jesus because our God was a patient God who was slow to anger. Jesus, whose body was broken, which we remember in the bread, when he absorbed the wrath of God against our sins so that we could be clothed in his perfect righteousness. Thank God that God was slow to anger, and he still is patient to us in our continued indwelling sinfulness. And if we have a real sense of how much God has been patient with us in our sins, then that ought to make us patient towards others, able to overlook, willing and eager to forgive. The patience of God leading to peace with God. Peace is what God's salvation has accomplished. Peace between us and God, where there was once nothing but hatred and anger and wrath. God's righteous and right wrath towards us in our sin and our sinful hatred towards him, and the resulting conflict and separation that resulted from that, the uncrossable chasm of our sin separating us from God that even if we wanted to cross, we couldn't. But God crossed it. God is the ultimate bridge builder, who brought about the ultimate reconciliation, resulting in peace between us and God, overcoming a conflict that we could never overcome. And that's brought to us by the blood of Jesus that's been poured out for us. And if we've been given peace with God, then how much more should we live at peace with one another? If we've been given peace with God at such a great cost, as we remember in this sacrament, then how much more should we be willing to go to great lengths and endure great cost to preserve and achieve peace with one another? And as we reflect and rejoice in the peace we have with God because of Jesus' sacrifice on our behalf, instead of fighting with one another, let's fight for peace with one another. Let's fight to pursue and maintain and preserve and protect the peace that God has bought for us. This broken body and this shed blood shows us the patient grace and mercy of our God that leads to peace with God.